This is the Capital City Recap with Michael Cohen on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
1320 WILS. Turning out to be a decent day at this point. 46 now. It is cloudy. Getting down to 39 is a low. Tomorrow, remaining cloudy, but a high of 58. So getting back to more comfortable weather. Getting down to 35. And then Sunday is sunny. High of 55. There you go. Well, North Korea today accusing South Korea and the CIA of plotting to assassinate their leader, Kim Jong-un. One of this country's real true experts on this man, Kim Jong-un, is Ken Goss. He's the director of the International Affairs Group at the Center for Naval Analyses, and he's the author of the book North Korean House of Cards, Leadership Dynamics Under Kim Jong-un. Ken, great to have you on WILS.
Nice to be with you.
Yeah, what would happen if we actually did assassinate Kim Jong-un?
I think that we're looking at a nightmare scenario if Kim were to die under any circumstances right now. There is no succession process in place. There's no obvious successor. So internal dynamics, I think, within North Korea would become very unstable. And we could look at a minimum, a possible turf wars, maybe even a civil war breaking out in North Korea, or a total collapse of the regime, which, of course, would not be confined to North Korean territory by itself. It could involve South Korean territory, could involve Chinese troops, U.S. troops, South Korean troops on the peninsula.
Do you think the CIA has any real interest of assassinating him?
No, my sense is that for right now, we need to have him there as the linchpin that really kind of holds the system together. It's much easier to deal with one individual than to deal with various centers of power within that regime.
And we see him, obviously, this young, kind of doughy-looking guy, and then around him are all these grizzled generals. It's hard to imagine how they really respect him. What's the real power dynamic there? What power does he really have when he deals with him?
Well, he is the ultimate decision maker. He probably has not fully consolidated his power. There are a variety of reasons for that. Mm-hmm. But he has used fear politics to really kind of put the more senior, in terms of age, the more elderly, the aspects of the power arrangement in North Korea in their place. People really have to take Kim Jong-un's views into account, and it is very difficult to get out of step with him without paying a heavy price.
Now, when he initially came in, was there a real threat to him maybe being somehow toppled?
In the given the nature of the regime, which is what we call a sarong-based or a leader-based system, you have to have somebody at the very top, and in North Korea, a member of the Kim family, in order to have that legitimacy. So it would have been very difficult for the regime to topple him. They could have very well co-opted him and made him into a figurehead. But that didn't happen. He was he had some very astute advisors around him as part of a regent structure in the beginning, and then he got rid of that regent structure in the end of 2013 when he executed his uncle. Mm-hmm. His aunt has been pretty much either in a hospital or dead since around September 2013, and really there is nobody else who can really challenge him.
Now, why did he? Because his brother was assassinated. He was outside the country. Why did that happen, in your view?
Well, his brother, note that it was his half-brother. Mm-hmm. And his brother had been essentially persona non grata inside the North Korean regime since 2001 when he was caught trying to sneak into Japan. Basically, that was done as a power play by Kim Jong-un's mother, who was trying to put forward one of her children as the heir apparent to Kim Jong-il in the early 2000s. And that led to Kim Jong-nam, who was his half-brother, being basically kicked out of the country.
Well, so he would have been a potential leader instead of Kim Jong-un, you're saying?
Well, there would have thought, given that he was the eldest male heir, that he would have been the logical successor. There was tension between him and his father for a variety of reasons, but he would have been the most likely the heir apparent. But Ko Yong-hui, who was Kim Jong-un's mother, was also a very powerful figure, and she wanted to put one of her sons forward, and so she engineered getting rid of Kim Jong-nam, at least as part of the succession process within North Korea. And then eventually Kim Jong-un was put forward in around the 2009 time frame.
Okay. Ken Goss with us, Director of International Affairs, the group there at the Center for Naval Analyses. What do you know of his psychology, Kim Jong-un? What kind of leader is he?
From what we understand, again, it's very hard to profile somebody remotely, but we believe that, one, he has a lot of astute leadership qualities. That's probably why he was chosen over his elder brother, Kim Jong-chol. But he is also somebody, apparently, who has a quick temper, and he is someone who is ruthless enough to navigate the troubled waters of North Korean politics.
Now, do we know how, I mean, do we have any insight into how things work just underneath him, if any particular generals have any power that supersedes others?
The military has been essentially neutered inside North Korea through the constant purging. I know a lot of people tend to talk about, well, could there possibly be a military coup? The key thing to understand in North Korea is that if there are three people, attending a meeting, at least one of those people is going to be an informant. And so the idea that people could get together to formulate a plot to overthrow him is probably not accurate. That said, there are a variety of people. Che Long-hae, who is a very powerful member of the party and very close to the Kim family. Hwang Jung-soo, who is the head of the political commissars within the military. Yeong-gil, who is the head of operations within the general staff. These are various power players that exist under him, but their power is linked to him directly as opposed to him. So they may compete for influence amongst themselves, but they don't challenge Kim Jong-un directly.
Now, if we were to see North Korea react militarily in some way, what would likely trigger that?
If North Korea were to, well, again, we need to also understand that Kim Jong-un is a rational actor. And so he is going to operate off of the calculus of the things that are most important to him. And that is basically the perpetuation of his own power and the perpetuation of the Kim family rule within North Korea. So whatever decisions he makes is going to be based on that. Now, how could we possibly get into some sort of a military tit-for-tat sort of thing? It would probably have to be something where North Korea was reacting to, a military strike or something against North Korea. That probably could generate some sort of reaction.
Okay. So are we better off just leaving them alone, or is this more aggressive stance somehow helping us out?
I will tell you one thing, that pressure alone on North Korea will not solve the North Korea problem. There has to be engagement with that regime at some point. And that engagement most likely has to come with economic and security incentives to get them to come to the table to negotiate on the nuclear program.
Isn't that how they ended up with their nukes?
No. The only time in which they slowed down their nuclear program was when we were actually engaging with them in the late 90s and early 2000s. Okay. It was once that we did not follow through with our part of the bargain to provide certain goods and services to North Korea in return for them to, provide certain concessions on their nuclear program. That's when they started basically tanked the deal and went back to reprocessing their plutonium and enriching their uranium.
They view us as the greatest evil, right? The worst enemy they've ever seen. Do you think they're Kim Jong-un wants to do that, to actually engage with us?
I think that North Korea is giving all kinds of signals that they would like to engage with us, but it has to be under their certain circumstances. They're not going to give up their nuclear program for nothing, which, you know, if you engage and basically say, give us your nukes and then we'll talk about engagement, well, I mean, why would they give up the one thing that gives them any amount of leverage in their interaction with the international community? So under the right circumstances, they may be willing to engage on certain aspects of their nuclear program. But if we're talking about completely solving the problem of North Korea, including getting the nuclear program, we're talking about years of confidence-building measures and building up a trust that absolutely does not exist on either side of the equation. North Korea towards the United States, the United States toward North Korea, getting China involved, getting South Korea involved. It's going to take time. It is not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, from what you're seeing from the Trump administration, how do you feel about the way they're engaging with them right now?
If the Trump administration is raising the pressure in order to set the table for negotiations, then I think it's probably an interesting strategy. It definitely is much better than what we had under the Obama administration of strategic patience, which was a unmitigated disaster in terms of trying to solve the North Korea problem. They just basically enhanced their nuclear program throughout that period in time. If this has a strategy to it, I think it's worth pursuing. But we need to understand that pressure alone, you know, in terms of sanctions, is not going to solve this problem. You've got to engage on other things other than just the nuclear problem in order to get North Korea to come to the table.
Ken Goss, the director of the International Affairs Group of the Center for Naval Analyses, his book is North Korean House of Cards. Also find him at CNA.org. Ken, great to have you on WILS. Thank you.
Sure. No problem.